Welcome to Startup Success, the podcast for startup founders and investors. Here you'll find stories of success from others in the trenches as they work to scale some of the fastest growing startups in the world. Stories that will help you in your own journey. Startup Success starts now.
Welcome to Startup Success.
Today we will be discussing real tactics startups can use to retain and attract talent, which is so important in this market, and what startups need to have on their radar around HR right now.
I'm really excited to have Moses Balian, who is an HR consulting manager at JustWorks, here today, as well as Keely Aguayo, who leads Berkland's HR people operations practice. Thank you so much for being here. Moses, I'm going to start with you because I know this is so forefront in founders' minds when they're getting started, and that is, you know, what do you advise as kind of the initial best practices, processes around HR for a startup or small business founder to start with?
Sure. Well, thanks so much for having me, Kate. I'm really thrilled to be on your podcast and enjoy
Thank
the
you.
Opportunity.
Thank
as far
you.
As policies and processes from the get-go, it all starts with payroll, right? So I'm an HR professional. I would love for every organization to have HR representation, but I know that that's simply not realistic. When you have fewer than 50 employees, I mean, obtain that as quickly as you can, but I understand that many companies just don't have those resources. So that's why having a payroll provider, ideally not just one that works well, that grinds the gears and withholds and remits the taxes appropriately, but ideally one that can provide you some degree of HR advisement around guardrails and flag some of the key compliance concerns that you might encounter as a micro business, I think that is going to be your biggest ally in the earliest of days.
Wow, I was not expecting that. Great answer.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was really not. Keely, would you agree? I mean, is that kind of the go-to place for your clients?
I definitely agree with Moses. Most startups, early stage companies we're seeing don't have the resources to bring HR in-house. So definitely finding a payroll provider that can provide those resources or an outside HR consultant is beneficial, especially when establishing procedures and processes and kind of starting to hire and get employees on board.
Interesting. Okay. So Moses, you've got your payroll, you found a true partner. Where do you go next?
Absolutely. I think there are a few boxes to check. Frankly, the compliance bedrock, if you will, to safeguard your company against the greatest risks. The first one is having offer letters. Offer letters are huge. The worst thing you can do is go out and hire a connection of a connection and say, hey, we'd like you to do X, Y, and Z. Yeah, payday is, I don't know, log in on the days that they say. And yeah, we'll come to a working arrangement once we see how you do. Ooh, there are so many cringy HR problems.
Wow.
With that, right? It's agreeing on compensation ahead of time and then delineating the employment relationship in writing. So, and actually there are many states have laws that require you to provide certain information to an employee upon hiring. Some don't, but New York, for example, you have to give the schedule and dates of payroll, how much it's going to be, whether they're overtime eligible, and actually even a statement of equal pay rights that they are free to discuss their wages with their colleagues and to affirm that you received the notice in your native language. So New York is way up there in terms of requirements, but other states have requirements on the books of you providing certain details to an employee upon hire.
Oh, that's so interesting because, Keely, I'm thinking of the first startup that I ever went to work for. There was no offer letter and they did exactly what Moses said not to do. It was a friend of a friend and they said, come on down. And then a year later, I was like, wait, wasn't I eligible for a bonus? So I love that. So, okay, two things I personally never would have thought of as the most important. Keely, what else besides payroll, offer letters?
So I definitely think even before the offer letter to kind of have in writing what you are going to offer employees is really important because those are the questions you're going to get. What are our benefit options?
Oh, you mean how like benefits? Okay.
Yeah. What are our benefit options? How much are you going to contribute? Are you going to offer a 401k plan? If I decide to move to another state, will my job still be intact? That kind of thing is really important because you're going to have to field those questions once you send those offer letters. So you want to sound like you know what you're talking about.
Okay. Wow. So you've got to get kind of the nitty gritty nuts and bolts figured out early on, I guess.
Totally. And wow. I think what Keely's saying is benefits that are still core to the employment relationship beyond just cash compensation. And that's absolutely true. I mean, a small businesses, even probably a decade ago, a three-person company could have gotten away with not offering benefits, with not offering 401k enrollment. But today, that just doesn't mm-hmm. compete. You won't be able to attract the talent that you need if you don't offer those things. So joining an HR solutions company, I mean, like JustWorks, like the one I work for, to be perfectly transparent, mm-hmm. Provides access to those kinds of benefits for small businesses at group rates. It's sort of a co-op for startups. So in that sense, yeah, the benefits offerings are really crucial to attracting talent.
Got it. And so does that go for employee policies as well? I mean, is it important to get those kind of nailed down early stages as well? Because I'm thinking back to my startup days, I don't remember any kind of harassment training, sick policies, mm-hmm. anything like that. Is that all critical as well?
Absolutely. I mean, especially harassment training, even if you're like, oh, there's only two of us and there's no way we're going to have a harassment training or a remote team. You know, it is required in most states and it is by law and you definitely want to comply with that. I also think as far as policies that a lot of things that you're going to get asked about are PTO, maternity and paternity mm-hmm. leave. You know, what are you going to offer? You need to know your state requirements. You need to know your federal requirements and make sure that you comply and that you're able to provide that information to the employees.
So I keep hearing a lot of state requirements from both of you already. So Moses, is that what you have to have on your radar right now, is that each state has kind of their own set of requirements and it's pretty well spelled out nowadays?
As we say in my native homeland, oh yeah, you betcha. as a Wisconsin native, yes. So state law is crucial. Federal policy has... Well, states have just taken employment regulations into their own hands. I'll say that when it comes to compliance requirements, parental leave, minimum wage, salary thresholds for exempt employees, for example, and sexual harassment training requirements as well. So absolutely, there are fewer and fewer things that a small, truly small company where they can fly under the radar. There used to be more like thresholds. You wouldn't be subject to the Americans with Disabilities Act, for example, until 15 employees. So you kind of didn't have to worry about that. But now there are so many states that have their own version of disability protections and employment that you can't look to federal as the authoritative guideline for your compliance regulations that you need to follow. 9 states now and Washington, D.C. either already have or have enacted a paid family leave law. So that's almost a fifth of jurisdictions in the U.S., right? And well over a fifth of the U.S. population. And most of those extend to employers of all sizes. So I agree that parental leave it's painfully complicated, but crucial early on, even when you just have a handful of employees, to understand what your benefit is, or at the very least, what state guidelines you need to follow, and to be able to communicate that to your employees with confidence when they're dealing with one of their biggest life changes to date.
Okay, this sounds complicated, and I'm thinking of all those startups out there right now and small businesses that are allowing employees to work in different states because of COVID, right? And the dispersed and whatnot. So this has got to be a big challenge right now for companies with these remote teams. Is that what you guys are seeing?
Yes. So I hesitate to say too much about it because a lot has yet to shake out as far as tax treatment and employment law jurisdictions, whether someone has actually moved. Or if they were, for example, I spent the entire summer away from my domicile, away from my tax jurisdiction. I didn't live there. I didn't move there. So the question was I an Oregon employee or a New York employee at that time? That's honestly not crystal clear. And companies would be prudent to follow both.
Got it. Interesting. Is that what you're seeing as well, Keely? It's still kind of shaking out.
Yeah, it's definitely a gray area right now. Mm-hmm. We're seeing it more and more being, you know, Q1 and everyone's going to file their taxes and get their W-2s. And they're like, wait, I don't live there anymore. I don't reside, you know. So we're definitely seeing that. Just last week, I had one company with three people that went on maternity leave in three different states. And it was three different laws regarding what the state was going to pay and what the company had to reimburse. So, there's definitely a lot going on with remote teams and kind of people moving around and things still shaking out. So.
Wow. So do you try to put a broad policy in place that, or you almost can't, right? Do you have to do it state by state? Like, what do you recommend?
So what I'm seeing a lot of is that companies are doing a broad policy and saying that they will work with the state within like regulations that.
Okay.
So if your state's going to compensate this much, you know, we'll handle the rest. You are in kind of making a general policy. We pay 3 to 6 months paid maternity or paternity leave in accordance with whatever your state requirements are. So.
Okay. Is that kind of what you're seeing as a best practice right now too, Moses? That's got to be hard to say.
It's hard to say. I want to speak to most frugal of businesses out there who aren't in a position to offer 3 months of paid family leave to employees out of the business's pockets. So I want to clarify that these state and DC's paid family leave programs are funded by, for the most part, employee payroll deductions. So the employer isn't paying anything out of pocket at the time, except their obligation to continue the employee's enrollment in health insurance coverage. So it's not like sick days where, like, the state of New York requires you to provide employer paid sick days. It's not like that. It's funded by taxes. The paid family leave program is. So in that sense, you hope that your employees are located in a state where there are those statutory benefits. If you're totally geographically flexible and they're not, that's going to be a tough conversation you have to have with them probably. Is you live in Michigan, as great as Michigan is, there are no statutory benefits. Historically, we haven't offered parental leave benefits out of pocket. So, you know, maybe we'll start. Maybe we'll revisit that because the state of New York, the state of California, the state of New Jersey has taken care of that for us in prior instances. But now you're our first employee to go on leave who in a state that doesn't have a paid family leave program. So I'm having those conversations with customers to prepare them for conversations with their employees. Literally yesterday and another one today. Wow. So it's a great question.
So it seems like, okay, payroll, hiring, getting your offer letter, your benefits all squared away. Then you have these remote teams primarily right now. What do you do on I don't want to say cultural because I don't think that's the right word, but are there policies that you can put in place to help build a team dynamic right now around that? Remote teams?
Is vibe the word you're looking for, Kate?
Yeah, maybe that's the right word. I mean, I don't know how you would do it right now. What are you seeing clients do? Because you've got everybody remote.
Policies and culture tend not to go hand in hand. It's kind of like if you're in elementary school and the rules are like, don't run, keep your hands to yourself. That doesn't exemplify what makes your classroom special, right? It's kind of like the don'ts rather than the do's. And so while, of course, fundamental to any healthy organizational culture is an effective sexual harassment and anti-discrimination policy, absolutely, because employees should be able to refer to some kind of rule book to learn how they could submit a complaint, how their complaint would be received, investigated, and actioned. That definitely needs to be there. I don't want to discount that. But you're not going to be able to publish a policy that promotes collaboration, to publish a policy that sparks innovation, right? So that, if I had the secret sauce, I would bottle it and sell it. But my answer is to still back to old-fashioned grit, to work with line managers, to champion a culture that to some degree you can define in advance. What I recommend is take a look at the people you've already hired. What are your favorite things about them? And then take a look at the people you might want to hire and the values that you would like them to exemplify. Really, culture, the most fundamental aspect of culture is hiring and hiring well. And that's to hire against certain values and attributes. So decide what those are, commit to them, hire against them. And a lot of the culture building work will be done for you in the months to come. But for the time being, if there are any shortcuts to culture, I'd say we actually take a lesson out of the book of sociology. And sociology says that culture is shared values, shared norms, shared language, and shared customs. So language especially, since we're in the remote world, can be huge. What language do you use to describe work ethic? Do you say grit, for example? Let that be used, pulled from your lexicon and used regularly. How do you provide accolades? How do you applaud good work? Find some vocabulary, find some words that you use in your organization that are special to your company and mean something specific, and those paint a vivid picture of belonging in your organization.
Wow, I love that. If I was a startup founder, I would just play that over a few times with my hiring for this year. I think that's really good guidance around remote hiring. That's fantastic. And I also liked with what you started in that the don'ts and the rules don't build the culture. But you brought up two things that we haven't touched on that I'm guessing is very important for kind of mitigating risks. And I think we should bring up here because they should probably have this on their radar. And that is the harassment and it's sexual. Is it still considered sexual harassment and is it discriminatory? What were the two that you said?
Yeah, I said sexual harassment and anti-discrimination. I think that's my favorite way to say it. Harassment prevention. And then, yeah, I like that. Sexual harassment prevention.
That sounds a little old school, but yeah. Okay, yeah. So those two policies, along with payroll and offer and employee benefits, I'm guessing those two are really critical as well.
Yeah, they are. And I do want to defend the old school lexicon for a moment. And the reason sexual harassment prevention is important is it does refer to a certain legal framework. So if anyone watched that awesome movie about Ruth Bader Ginsburg on the basis of sex, HR professional, I highly recommend it. It's super compelling. And it talks about how sexual harassment is a form of discrimination. Fundamentally, it's sex discrimination. And so that's why we do have to use that specific language that refers to a legal framework within the Civil Rights Act. I do agree that it could probably use a makeover as far as approachability in a colloquial sense. I would love to see us refer to use more accessible language when it comes to sexual harassment, and one that doesn't have such scary words in it. I completely agree. But for the time being, it's important to reference that sort of original source.
Okay. Interesting. That's a great point. So Keely, where do you go for those two policies? Is that something you talk to who you're working with on HR? I mean, I'm guessing they don't have them online.
So there's actually a lot of great companies out there that have done really good sexual harassment trainings that kind of play out scenarios. They're virtual videos. They're usually about an hour long. They do a really good job of breaking out. I actually watched one not too long ago, and they did it on like a color-coded scale. Like, is this action green? Is this yellow? Is this orange? And then is this red, which would be a legal issue.
Okay.
And they did a really good job of like breaking out things that could be considered harassment and then where it hits the point where it's like a legal action and the person's being discriminated against or retaliated for not giving in to harassment kind of thing. So there's lots of great companies that do that. I definitely urge all my startups, and when they come to me, because they usually do when they're hiring about this, to kind of vet those and find one that works best for them.
Okay. And so this is something you both obviously recommend that you have to get in place early on.
Absolutely. And it's actually a legal requirement in some jurisdictions that have training requirements. We're in this in-between space where this whole sexual harassment training initiative is really taking off. I have kind of a sneaky shortcut that'll work in the inter-year period that we're in right now.
Can New you share York, it?
I do. And it's actually to look to the Empire State. I live and work in New York and can say that my state has led the charge on a number of employee well-being initiatives.
Okay.
And New York is unique in that it has specific requirements for what needs to be in your sexual harassment policy. Not just that you have one, but it has certain criteria, such as a few examples of what constitutes sexual harassment, and then also instructions on how to submit a complaint. So I don't believe any of the other states that require it have such specific criteria requirements for their policy. So actually, you can go to newyork.gov, check out their policy template. It's probably stronger than what the requirements are for any other jurisdiction in the country. Change New York to Oregon, to New Jersey, or whatever, and it'll work great. Honestly, they have a model policy that you can download, and it is superb.
That is such a great tip. And it probably has things in there like how to, you know, submit a complaint, all of that, that you really need. You really want your employees to have.
Totally.
Oh, all right. Hack. You heard it here on Startup Success. Thank you. I love it. Okay, good. And that, which kind of brings me up to something that I wanted to get into, and that is submitting complaints. I mean, is that part of something I'm guessing that clients have to figure out, right? I mean, it's one thing to have these policies, but if the employees don't know what to do, if they think there's been an infraction, is that something that you guys have to guide clients through? And it sounds like New York kind of gives you the template to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. So New York will explain to an employee the escalation procedure and what they can expect sort of experientially for the life cycle of their complaint. Now, that doesn't mean anything without an employer that's committed to that process and understands mm-hmm. how to carry it out. So yeah, I'm on the phone with customers, I mean, on a weekly basis. Quick aside, we HR colleague and I have this joke that it's human resources. Your major life events are our Tuesdays. So I have conversations frequently about addressing sexual harassment complaints and conducting investigations. And yeah, there is a proper procedure to it, which I'd love to get in detail about, but we don't have time for it here today. But kind of like I said before about rules don't make culture, it's well and nice if you have a reference document that spells out the complaint procedure, but if you have an employee, dig into your intranet, pull out the policy and read it and be like, am I even in the right place? Like, when was the last time somebody updated this document? Is this real? You know, they have to believe, based on the behavior that they see modeled in management and in their colleagues in the organization, that this is indeed the right way to do it. So honestly, old-fashioned relationship building, manager to individual contributor, relationships, regular check-ins, that is more important for combating harassment than just having the instructions in your manual.
Wow, that's such a good point, because I mean, not with startups, but I've been at big companies, you know, where you see the policies in the employee handbook and you don't buy it for a second because you know, the culture just doesn't support it at all. I think that's a really good point. Have you seen that as well, Keely? I mean, kind of, you know, making sure that clients walk the talk, or so to speak.
I've definitely seen it in my professional experience. Mm-hmm. I mostly work with very early stage startups, so they're kind of just developing these processes, and I hope they're not getting off to wrong foot.
Right.
But I also feel like we're seeing a shift, especially I work with a lot of tech clients, and tech companies are shifting towards really inclusive cultures that really feel welcoming and whatnot to everyone, because a lot of them are remaining remote and not going back into the office. So that has definitely been something that's been the forefront in the lot, at least since Q3 2020. So we are seeing a push for that really inclusive, nurturing culture that kind of
is a piece. Also. Right. I think it brings out, you know, the best of employees, which is something that is so, you know, important to startup founders. And that's around talent and, you know, kind of risks and that. And I mean, what are you guys seeing around talent and your clients and any advice on, you know, like attracting, retaining talent? I know that's, you know, at the forefront of a lot of our startup founder audience needs, right? And they're, when they're just getting started and they don't have a resource on the team dedicated to that.
Absolutely. The old school, if we'll still use that language, answer to that question is professional development and growth opportunities. I don't think this is the best use of time to speak about that right now because it's going to mean such different things at different organizations. So instead, I would like to talk about a crucial point that Keely brought up earlier, which is the benefits offerings and sort of the whole package when it comes to what it means to be an employee at your organization. There's also a lot of really cool ancillary benefits that companies are offering these days that I made this up, but I call them lifestyle benefits. It's things like a city bike subscription or a gym membership or Barry's Bootcamp or like One Medical, for example. We provide all our benefits eligible customers access to One Medical, which is this like really swanky urgent care facility that's in all the major cities. And like,
yes.
I don't know what I would do without it. Like, so what the thing is there are these kind of relatively lower cost lifestyle benefits that you can offer. And if you can integrate, if you can kind of like seep into the routine and the regular daily life of your employees and make them go, I don't know how I could live without this. If you can find a benefit like that to offer, that's going to increase retention. It just kind of increases the friction that they would experience by separating with you. And more attention is focused on the quality of benefits offerings. And for example, not wanting to switch networks, find a different doctor. It's been reported that that's a huge reason that somebody stays with their company. So I, you know, call it attracting, keeping employees with honey rather than with vinegar, right? I want you to make them excited to stay, not just reticent to leave, but there's a lot that you can do on both fronts.
I think that is such a good point because that's something that, you know, business owners, startup founders, senior managers, they can do now, even in these COVID times that, you know, Right. You can't do a lot around professional development or team things, but benefits, I agree 100%. I mean, I know what about that One Medical that you're talking about, and I would love it if I had access to it. Hint, hint. But no, I do think that's such a good point because those lifestyle benefits, I think it's what everybody's looking for right now, especially post-COVID. Mm-hmm. They're even more important. It's shown us so many examples of why that's important. Okay, Keely, I'm kind of putting you on the spot here, but do you have any good examples of benefits like that? Because I think for those listening, like the boutique medical, the cool gym membership, the bike service, I'm trying to think if we could share any other ideas with founders who are listening. I mean, I don't know. You know what I've heard too? A day off a month to do volunteer work. That's tough right now with COVID, but maybe it's just a day off with your family. Any others either of you have seen?
I'm going to kind of speak to this from another point of view. I'm a mom.
Okay.
And I'll take the benefits I'm looking for and the benefits that I feel parents are looking for.
Yes.
One is unlimited PTO.
Things
that happen. A lot of us still have kids at home and we're trying to do virtual learning and make all this work almost a year in now. So definitely that unlimited PTO, that flexibility work. That's another thing, schedule flexibility. You know, can I do virtual learning in the morning, work a little later on the back end? As far as benefits go, are you going to cover any of my dependent care benefits or dependent benefits in general? I have a few clients that are doing a reimbursement for DoorDash every month. So
love that.
I have one that's reimbursing all grocery delivery fees. So you don't have to go and get groceries right now. Don't have to take the kids out. Don't have to figure it out. So definitely those kinds of things are really appealing to new hires right now, especially parents who are still dealing with a lot a year into this.
Oh, I love those. Okay, I want some of those. Those are great. Those are fantastic.
Keely, those were fantastic. Some that I hadn't even considered. And I just want to highlight, too, with what you said, how a few of these benefits we talked about, a One Medical subscription, or for example, JustWorks also provides its customers, employees access to Talkspace, mental health online asynchronous therapy for 3 free months. So every employee gets to try it out and then continue after 3 months if they want. Well, these cost money. Right? Well, not if you're a JustWorks customer, but normally they cost money. But with what Keely said, the workplace flexibility, unlimited PTO, if handled correctly, this doesn't cost you a thing. Of course, handled poorly, it can have tremendously poor productivity impact.
Right.
But managed well, it can make a huge difference with no top line costs.
I think that's an excellent point. Just give me quickly, how do you not get burned by unlimited PTO? Because just as a manager, that one scares me. So can you talk to me? Because that's, I love the theory of it, but it also sounds like it could be risky. Am I wrong? I mean, tell me I'm wrong, because I want to be wrong.
Studies show Americans are really bad at taking vacation.
Okay.
And generally that doesn't change when they have unlimited PTO.
Okay.
Yep. I completely agree. I have honestly been doing this for about 10 years and never heard of an instance of someone abusing an unlimited PTO policy. Okay. I feel like they almost don't want to take it because it's not like November and they're like, oh, I'm going to lose 2 weeks of vacation next month. Let me take this right now or figure this out kind of thing. With that unlimited policy and the flexibility of it, they're most likely, yes, to hopefully go on vacation, but do it at their pace and not feel like they have to and that kind of thing.
Wow. Okay. This is so great. I feel like I wish I had more time with you both because I could just pick your brains all evening. But I feel like we've given startup founders so much good information here on getting started and then now how to, you know, attract and retain talent. This has been so, so, so fun. I feel like the wisdom shared. I mean, we have some serious hacks tonight. So that being said, I want our listeners to be able to follow up with you. So Moses, can you tell us a little bit about JustWorks and where the audience can get in touch with you for more information?
Sure, absolutely. So briefly, JustWorks is a PEO. That means a professional employer organization where we provide access to group benefits, enterprise level benefits at reasonable rates. And so that's why, in that sense, it's like a co-op for startups. We use the economies of scale to get great rates on health insurance. We also, I'm an HR consulting manager there, for example. I get on the phone with customers and walk through complex HR issues, whether it's how to conduct a sexual harassment investigation, how to administer parental leave. So it's really support around payroll, benefits, and compliance for small and growing businesses nationwide. That's what we how we hope to help. You can get in touch with us. If you're thrilled and you just want to talk to a salesperson, call 888-306-0448. Otherwise, I'm not a salesperson. I'm an HR consultant. Email me, moses@justworks.com. I would love to talk shop with you. I'd love to get deeper into any topics that we touched on today. So again, moses@justworks.com if you just want to chat, and I'd love to hear from any of the listeners.
Oh, great. You've been fantastic, Moses. Next year, we're having a conference in San Francisco. Really hope you can come out and participate in some panels. I think you've shared a lot of great information. So thank you. And then Keely, tell us about Berkland's people operations practice that you had and where listeners can reach you.
Sure. So Berkland offers full service HR and people ops consulting services to our clients. Berkland as a whole also offers CFO, accounting, and tax services. We are currently a team of 7 on the HR side, and we would be happy to help you. You can reach me at hello@berklandassociates.com.
Awesome. I mean, really, you two gave such great advice and insight. I'm very excited about this episode because I think that our listeners can take real information here and run with it. And I appreciate that. And it was a lot of fun talking to you both. So thank you. Have a good evening. And I look forward to chatting with you both again in the future.
You've been listening to Startup Success. To make sure you don't miss out on future episodes, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast player. Like what you hear? tap the number of stars you think the show deserves in Apple Podcasts. For more tools and resources for your own startup success, check out berklandassociates.com. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.